pregnancy, HIV, other people that are doing primary prevention work also engaged in really trying to work with the age group that a lot of our grantees are working with. So how do they leverage those partnerships, I think, is one of the key things that I see moving forward that will help sustain prevention efforts.
I think two things. One is that I definitely would echo what Margaret is saying about chronic disease and, about partnerships. And then what I wanted to say was that I think that there's a lot of interest right now in looking at chronic disease prevention, particularly from CDC looking at the community transformation grants, but also more generally in looking at trying to impact obesity, but also heart disease and other chronic disease. We know that people who experience intimate partner violence are at higher risk of also experiencing chronic disease. So I think that there's a real opportunity for partnerships in that realm. And then what are, switching gears a little bit, our Delta Prep coalitions have found that there are some funders that have never really been interested in funding them in the past that are really excited about primary prevention. These are all nonprofit groups, and so they often have established relationships with funders. But some funders who are interested in youth development, funders who are interested in women's health, they've gotten really excited about primary prevention. And it's also a challenge for coalitions, understanding that the work really does continue and that their service work is so much in need right now that it can feel difficult to approach a funder for something different than services. But in some cases, they've had a lot of interest in primary prevention.
Great. And just to show you, that's a list of the steering committee members for North Carolina, so you can see disability, public health. The School of Public Health has capstone students as well working on a lot of the projects. For the past 3 years, we've had 3 to 6 capstone students also working with us on their projects. And you can see, again, the diversity of the representation on the North Carolina team. Are there questions? Yes.
Physical, sexual, psychological stalking as a full range of activities that encompass intimate partner violence. And I think the other issue there is that it can be with a current or former spouse or boyfriend, and it exists along a continuum. So we might be talking about a one-time event, and we might be talking about long-term battering. So that's kind of what generally encompasses intimate partner violence. David.
And
oh,
the difference for that and domestic violence?
Domestic, sometimes. Okay, David.
I think that it's a matter of there's different perspectives in language, and I think that you're right that particularly the Delta grantees would use those terms interchangeably, and that the intimate partner violence would be used when talking with the public health infrastructure, and domestic violence is a term that's been used within the organizations there, and the general public, the term domestic violence resonates better. There's been some testing done of the term intimate partner violence with the general public.
Yeah.
It tests very poorly, so it doesn't resonate as well. So
there is some ambiguity because some may think domestic violence would also include child abuse or child-on-parent abuse. So CDC is a little more specific that they are addressing the current or former intimate partner as opposed to the more holistic family violence. Susan?
Well, CDC has long had intimate partner violence.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they describe it for years and years and years. In my view, IPV is between a current or former husband or boyfriend, including same-sex relationships. I itself to intimate partners. So it's much more inclusive in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, sir.
You mentioned briefly that you're seeking, or repeatedly, you're seeking new partners and new groups to become involved. And yet, what seems to me that falls by the wayside are the justice community that are intimately involved, the child protective services, adult protective services. There are a wide array of existing agencies that I think are using domestic violence as the catch-all term. And then there are the DV agencies that are in the community that are all part. And although they're currently more focused on intervention and victim protection and bringing a perpetrator to justice, whatever that means, so I just see there's tremendous opportunity to help them be a part of this expanding look at of what's going on, because everything is related to everything.
And that is one aspect of it, and you pointed out one of the problems. If we're talking primary prevention, we're talking about an act before the abuse has occurred. And just because North Carolina hasn't used them, they are represented on our Domestic Violence Commission and other groups. They're not in our particular plan, but part of that becomes that law enforcement cannot necessarily intervene personally until an act has occurred, which then moves it into the secondary prevention, tertiary. But,
okay.
I mean, education of...
Let me give an example. We do training of our sheriffs and police departments on mental health, so that when there's someone who's in the street who's clearly experiencing difficulty, they're able to approach him in a way, him or her, in a way that doesn't elicit the fear response or more bizarre behavior that then escalates. And so no act has been done, but an observation has been made, and the intervention is one that is more of a social worker, more of a community health worker than it is of, so I'm yeah. suggesting that we have many different roles we play. And
absolutely, and there are many models for that. There are a lot of communities that are training.
No
problem. Go for it.
Yeah, but I think, go ahead, Margaret.
I actually think both positions are correct. I think CDC, for certainly the last 9-10 years as we've been involved in this work, has really kind of staked its claim in terms of primary prevention and really working with our grantees and communities around this issue. And I think we've made great strides, but as we've made great strides, I think it is now important to recognize that we can't stay siloed. It can't just be primary prevention on this side, intervention on this side, and prevention in general exists along a continuum. And I think it is time for public health to really reach out to the other service providers and see how we can better work together around this issue. So I think both.
And in North Carolina, as we do with the commission, with a number of other groups, with injury prevention within North Carolina, HHS, and Domestic Violence Commission, it just happens not to be a specific piece of this particular project of Delta.
I'd also like to add that I think a really important opportunity that is a great first step, but a really challenging one, is around messaging. And if across violence areas, if we are all giving the message that violence is preventable and using coordinating messaging when we're talking with community members, I think that can be a real benefit, because again, we know that in public health work, you need multiple messengers, multiple times that you're hearing the issue. I know California has done some work groups who have a common interest are using common themes in their messaging. And so I think that can be a great first step that people can use across agencies and types of violence.
And it is a good side effect. When I was mentioning Evolve in Wilmington, because it is the emphasis on the youth and after-school activities and a place for them to be and to interact safely. Again, you have fewer kids out on the streets getting into trouble, getting into fights, getting into problems. So they are learning healthier, safer, less potentially criminal behaviors by being in the basketball league, by being in the Girl Scout group. So they do interact. They're not totally siloed, even though it's not particularly brought into this project.
Well, that was my question about evaluation. How are you, even in your monthly discussions, talking about what outcomes these individual agencies and organizations would be expecting to see? I know it's early, but just a little bit of on.
Sure. So I can speak to two different levels. For our evaluation, because Delta Prep focused on building organizational capacity, we are really focusing on that ODSF data, the interview data. I love that data, and I can talk about organizational capacity all day long. But I understand that that might not be what everybody else, the data that everybody else likes, for good reason, because building capacity for what? To do what? And so, so the reality is that that looks different for every different kind of project that folks are working on. I think there's a great opportunity to start talking about community-level indicators that maybe a group of grantees could track over time. I think that there's a lot of interest in that. For right now, I know that the Futures Without Violence group is working on an evaluation of coaching boys into men in particular. I think the PI's name is Dr. Elizabeth Miller, and she would be able to speak to that. I think I have her name right. Similarly, Dorothy Edwards is working on evaluating Green Dot and that particular curriculum. So I think that at the curriculum level, groups are very aware of the need for evaluation, and each kind of curricula would be developing its own evaluation. And again, I think an additional step is that if we could look across in our case grantees and be following some community level indicators, that might be helpful.
Yeah. Did you have a follow-up before I?
Well, it's kind of tied in there.
Okay, so one of the things, too, I would agree with everything that Jessica said. I think evaluation is also kind of a newer concept that a lot of our DV coalitions and community coordinated responses are working with. I mentioned the empowerment evaluation process, and I think that has been very successful. I think on the local level, I think you still see a lot of process evaluation as opposed to outcome evaluation, and we're supporting our grantees as they build up their capacity to do that work. But with Delta, we also funded what we call a cross-site evaluation, where we had the opportunity to look at capacity building to do primary prevention across all 14 funded grantees. And in fact, I have with me a draft copy of a final report that is being put together that talks about some of the improvements that have been made along the way. And I can share some of them with you. And one of the assessments that was done was on the 14 state plans. I think I mentioned that Delta and RRPE, our sister program, engaged in strategic planning around primary prevention, and it was very much a stepwise process that really included an in-depth needs assessment, looking at community needs, organizational needs, identifying appropriate goals and objectives for moving primary prevention forward. So we did an analysis of all of those finalized plans. And some of the things that we noted was that Delta program grantees were able to develop data-driven IPB primary prevention state plans, which is in and of itself really a very significant advancement, that grantees
we're now using data better in terms of data for decision making purposes and to be able to evaluate a lot of their efforts a little bit better, that there was increased knowledge and skills around planning, implementation, and evaluation of public health principles and practices for doing this work, that state steering committee members had increased their commitment to ongoing planning and improvement for primary prevention efforts, that the Delta Program State Prevention Plan addresses the needs of particular groups, really thinking about priority populations and their needs, and adjusting their approaches to make sure that they were culturally appropriate and relevant. Some of the state plans really were able to build synergy around additional partnerships for their efforts moving forward, and there was an increase in the number and diversity of stakeholders that were committed to doing primary prevention efforts, and that the state planning process really spurred innovation and increased infrastructure to address primary prevention. So there have been attempts at evaluation at various levels, from the community to cross-state, but across the state domestic violence coalition. So I think as we go forward, we'll be able to refine our evaluation more, and we'll be supporting our grantees to do the same. So hopefully that kind of addressed some of the questions.
One last question.
Okay. It was excellent. We made a lot of conversations. On and on, I want everybody to know. I appreciate what you said about messaging. And I noticed that one of the slides indicated that a large proportion of the activities amongst various groups locally, regionally, was education, was the largest proportion, if I recall correctly. And I'm wondering about target audiences, because the word education is really broad, and I'm thinking, are we talking about, is there any breakdown that indicates who the audience is in that educational intervention? Because I can think of, if we're talking about school, clinicians, public, do we have a
all of the above.
Is there any larger proportion than another that sticks out, or is it just such a large potpourri of audiences that?
So I can speak to the Delta PrEP data, and again, so we looked at, just looking at the prevention efforts, there are 103. Those that were focused on the community, and I picked those because this presentation was about community-level approaches, there were 29. So of those, in education, the main groups were DV agencies and also educators through high school. So I think that I don't have the exact number. Oh, yes, yes I do. Because I have my slides in front of me. 17 out of the 29 were really looking at DV agencies and education through high school. So I find these two particularly exciting examples of partners, because for DV agencies, this is a relationship that coalitions already had. They were already working with DV agencies. So this is kind of the taking those partnerships that already exist and either expanding or enhancing them to include primary prevention. And I really want to include this idea that working to address the root causes of violence is nothing new to these coalitions. In fact, it was why a lot of them came together to really serve survivors, advocate for victims, and be able to stop violence. But in knowing that the huge need for services, I think that what Delta PrEP would offer is the time and space to be able to plan for primary prevention as one way of addressing those root causes. And primary prevention into the DV agency work with their member agencies is one kind of strategy to do this. And then education through high school, again, they were very active in a lot of schools already. If there were disclosures, to be able to connect students to services. And so this is, again, looking at, because there's interest in teen dating violence prevention, how the really important role coalitions play to be able to support schools, to be able to talk about the gender-based violence that is occurring, and to make sure that the prevention efforts are speaking to or benefiting from all the experience that the coalitions have.
Okay. Their curricula then for groups and includes high school teachers?
Yep. And I can talk with you. We have sort of, and this is where Delta Prep is a little bit different than Delta, in that for Delta Prep, there were, in some cases, curricula that were already being used and that already had traction. And so